Faith is taking the first step, even when you don't see the whole staircase.
Our kickoff for our capital campaign, I produced a short video which sort of captures the essence of what we're trying to do. Many people actually volunteered to be interviewed, but in the film you only see three couples who graciously gave early to the capital campaign, and I interviewed them to get some of their ideas about why they did it. And also I interviewed our spiritual leader, Reverend Melissa. The interviewees are Kay and Mark Ekman, Jennifer May and Lois Weir, Brad Bolton and Reverend Christy Anderson and Melissa. And I also like to thank Brad because I borrowed some of his photos to use in the video, and Keegan Lauren, who designed our logo for the Capital campaign, and I used that in the video as well. Also, he helped with some cinematography. Keeping with the theme of the service, this is the little projector that could, and... The video looks a lot better on my computer screen than it does here, but I think you'll enjoy it anyway.
This morning's story for all ages is about a little church that might sound familiar. Once there was a wonderful little church in Kent, Ohio. It was a Unitarian Universalist church. The people who came to this church every week tried very hard to have open minds, helping hands, and loving hearts. Every Sunday, they would all gather at the church. The children would attend Sunday school service, and the adults would attend a Sunday service and enjoy a thoughtful sermon by Reverend Melissa. Afterwards, the children would play, and the adults talked and drank lots of coffee. Well, it took tons of work to keep this little church running, and everybody pitched in to help. Some taught Sunday school, some sang or played a musical instrument, and some cooked pancakes. Others ran things called committees that worked really hard to keep the church in good shape. And because it was a church of the open mind, every person in goodwill was welcome. It didn't matter if you were tall or short, quiet or noisy, or even if you snorted out of your nose when you laughed, you were welcome. And because it was the church of the helping hands, the members of the church did their best to help others in need. They cooked lunches for homeless people and donated to people who needed a helping hand. The children helped too. They did things like raising money to send bees to farmers in far-off lands. And because it was the church of the loving hearts, the people of the church cared for each other and tried to help each other as best they could and treat everyone with dignity and respect. Well, this place was so wonderful that more and more and more people started coming every Sunday, and more children started going to Sunday school, and more coffee was drank than ever before. This was good because the world could really use more people with open minds and helping hands and loving hearts. But it also made a problem, and it was a big one. More and more people were attending church, but the building stayed the same size. It was kind of like when your feet grow and they won't fit inside your favorite shoes anymore. When all of the members of the church tried to gather together, they did not fit very well at all inside the church. The building fit too tight. Like this. Well, when your feet grow, you get new shoes. And when your church grows, you gotta get a bigger building. For a long, long time, the members of the church discussed what to do. They talked about different ideas, and they wrote up suggestions, and then they talked some more and adjusted the plans. And then they did it all over again, talking and planning and suggesting and listening to each other's ideas until finally a really good plan was made to make our space bigger. But man, it looked like so much work. How is it going to get done? That's a lot easier to buy new shoes than it is to put up a new building. There's wood to buy and nails and shingles and carpet for the floor and glass for the windows. And somebody has to draw plans up. And then there are construction people to hire. And there's like a gazillion things to think about. Boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Lots and lots of stuff to do. Just thinking about it could give you a tummy ache. But the people of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent knew something. They knew that every single person in this community of open minds and helping hands and loving hearts would pitch in. And they trusted that each member and friend of the church would help as best they could. And knowing this made the project much less scary and settled their tummies right down. They were not afraid to embark on this very big but wonderful project. They think they can. What do you think? Well, I know what I think. I know they can.
in light of the work we're doing in this congregation to become more inclusive, both personally and institutionally, I share this prayer from Stephen Schick. Spirit of life, I'm entwined in your delicate web of mutuality. The life energy that makes me reach for the sun also moves me to become wrapped, like the strong bittersweet vine and the delicate sweet pea, around those I meet and love. Here in the tangle of my daily life, I feel your pulse and sense what it means to be alive. Here, twisted and knotted, I thrive, seeking the light that will pull from me the fragrant blossom of love. Spirit of life, help me to experience the beauty of your interwoven and intricate web, that I might always embrace without reserve all those whom my life touches.
A few weeks back that had a sign out front. It said, "Faith, no proof required. Doubt, no proof enough." You might have guessed it was not a Unitarian Universalist church. Faith, no proof required? What does that really mean? And how could the concept of faith be relevant for us? I think Unitarian Universalists have a somewhat uncomfortable relationship with the word faith. Sometimes faith is used synonymously with the term belief. We might refer to a faith community, and by that we typically mean a religious group that has a common set of religious beliefs. But that's not really a good way to define a UU congregation. Because one of our core principles is that everybody is on their own path to define what their beliefs are. So we can have, sitting in our pews at service, a Christian sitting right next to a Buddhist, and after service they may go down to coffee hour and share a story with a humanist. But there is another meaning of faith, and that's that we can have faith in something. That we can have this kind of a faith that things will work out, that the world can be healed, that when we are called to help, we can move that train over the mountain. That's the kind of faith that I want to talk about today. It is faith moving forward with confidence. It is faith that energizes us, gives us hope to pursue our dreams and our vision of the world. It's the faith that was shown by this congregation in the past when a small group of Kent citizens founded this church and built this magnificent church building. It's the faith of those members in more recent times who raised money to save our badly weathered church building and to call the first full-time minister in many decades. Many of those members who saved the church in the recent times are here in this room today, and their actions created a legacy that will live on past their lifetimes. We're about to embark on a historic capital campaign. Some of you may have doubts about our ability to meet our goals, but we're asking you to move together today to have faith. So I thought for inspiration, I would tell you the story of how Rick Warren started his church, which you may know is now a rather large church. After graduating from seminary, he and his wife packed up their very meager belongings and, with their four-month-old child, moved from Texas to California to start a brand new church. They arrived full of hope, even though he says they arrived with no money, no church building, no members, no home, and in fact, didn't know a single soul in the area. He said, "It was the greatest step of faith we had ever taken to that time." He describes what happened when he got to California. "I pulled off the freeway and stopped at the first real estate office I could find. I walked in and I introduced myself to the first realtor I met. I said with a big smile, 'My name is Rick Warren. I'm here to start a church. I need a place to live, and I don't have any money.'" Don grinned and laughed out loud, but within 2 hours, he'd found us a condo to rent, got the first month's rent for free, and agreed to become the first member of Saddleback Church. Then he goes on to describe how, after moving on faith, the needed financial support just seemed to materialize as needed. So he describes how they were sponsored by three different churches that collectively contributed $1,000 a month to their new church. And one of the other stories that he tells is about a woman who wrote him a letter and said, "Oh, I heard you speak one time, and I thought I'd send you a check for your new church." Well, they had just gotten back from going out and buying toys for their new nursery, spending the last of their food money, and this check was actually for the same amount that they had just spent on toys. So at the end of telling his whole story, he says, "I love the Bible paraphrase of Ecclesiastes 11:4. If you wait for perfect conditions, you will never get anything done. If you insist on solving all the problems before you make a decision, you'll never know the thrill of living by faith." Wow. What an amazing journey. We have to grant that Rick Warren has a certain Christian take on faith that's probably not shared by most of the people in the pews. Later in the book, he says, "Wherever God guides, he provides." So why is his story relevant to us today? Well, now I need to tell you what Paul Harvey would say was the rest of the story. Although Rick Warren acted out of his religious beliefs and a sense of calling, he didn't simply sit back and say, "Well, God will provide," and then, you know, have a charmed life where everything worked out for him. He actually worked very thoughtfully and hard to make his vision become a reality. So to give you one example, he reasoned that since he was trying to draw people, unchurched people, to his new church, the best time to try to make a big push for new members would be Easter Sunday. And so he wrote a letter inviting people to come to his new church, and he and his wife sat down and hand-addressed and stamped 15,000 invitation letters. And they went from 15 members at service to 205 on Easter Sunday, and now they actually have thousands of members in his little church, what started out as a little church. So ultimately, I think his story is really a story of faith that gave him hope to pursue his vision, but it was really his thoughtful efforts to live into his dream that made all the difference. And that's really what I see our church doing. We have faith, not a God will provide kind of faith, but faith in ourselves to create a better future. We've created a vision, a dream to expand our space so we can live out our church mission and be a beacon of liberal religion in our area. We want more people to be able to come in and to experience the love in our congregation, and to have the chance to be transformed through their participation in our church community. But we're not moving together just on faith alone. We have spent years discerning what is our best path forward, thinking about different possibilities, and the congregation has endorsed a plan. So now we are asking you to make a commitment to bring our church vision to fruition. Even if we can't see the whole staircase yet, we're ready to take the next step to embark on our capital campaign. I understand that it can feel scary to commit money when the outcome is uncertain. A few years ago, I was asked to give money to something they called the Pace Setters campaign. At the time, we knew we had a need for more space, but we had no plan yet for expansion. We didn't even know if we were going to stay here at this location or move to a new place. But I gave money anyway, on faith, as did many other people. And as a result, the church had the money it needed on hand when the property behind the church became available. We were able to buy that property where we're going to go out and have lunch later today, and where we're going to put our new building. So we need everybody to be all in as we step forward together in faith. We'll be asking everybody to make a pledge, recognizing while that we may not all give equally, we can all demonstrate a commitment to the church. If everyone does what we can, then we believe we can live our dreams. I want to end with an excerpt from a sermon by Peter Friedrichs called Everything is Possible. Whether Jesus actually fed 5,000 hungry people with 5 loaves and 2 fish, or whether it was some grand illusion performed by a master magician, is irrelevant. The story of the loaves and the fish is a story of the victory of faith over fear. The disciples thought they would have a riot on their hands if they were unable to feed the hungry horde. They were convinced that the needs of the people far outstripped their resources and capabilities. "Send them away," they urged Jesus. "We're a bunch of fishermen in the middle of a desert, and we don't see a way out of this predicament." But Jesus showed them that it was their vision that was limited. He showed them that unknown possibilities exist beyond our knowing. The story of the loaves and the fishes is a lesson in moving from a mentality of scarcity, where we believe that there isn't enough to go around and that many people inevitably are going to go hungry, to an attitude of abundance, where all needs will be met and where all things are possible. I have a plaque on the wall of my office that says, "Faith makes things possible. It doesn't make them easy." Living into our future requires us to act boldly and to move forward with faith.
I have some stories to tell you today. If you've been around here for a little while, you probably know that every now and again I get inspired to go digging through the mess of papers in a closet next door that really should be in an archives to see what I can find out about our congregation's history. I think it's so fun to go digging through old minutes and snippets of stories that are not organized or compiled, so you can't find the whole story, and orders of service to find out who were these people who came before us here? What were they doing? What mattered to them? What did they love? And what did we inherit of their spirit? And I have this vision that in 50 years, there are going to be people who are trying to find out our story. But it's going to be way easier for them because it's going to be organized and it's going to be digitized, and they'll just sit comfortably without all those crumbling, musty papers and read the story that we will maybe even have compiled into a book or something for those people who come in 50 years. And when they find that story, if we haven't told it for them and they have to piece it together, we have to forgive them if they think that the story of this chapter in our congregation's history is a story of committees. On the surface, it seems, in fact, to be a story of committees. So we started with a committee to create a new mission and vision and covenant for our congregation. And that committee worked for over a year and invited the whole congregation, and we crafted the language that we've been using ever since. That was finalized about 8 years ago. And then we had this vision that said we're going to restore and expand our space, but that seemed like a distant possibility. So what did we do? We created a committee. And the committee studied possibilities. And I think in total there were at least six committees, each with a different charge over the course of the last 8 years, trying to figure out how exactly are we going to do this? How are we going to live into this vision of renewing and expanding our space? And some of those committees were tasked with looking at this building, and would this building be, were you able to renovate it? Is it structurally sound? And some of those committees, before we knew the answer to that, were looking at other properties. And some of those people were kind of constantly had that on the back of their mind, and they'd send an email message. I was driving in Hudson today and I saw this building. We were looking all over the place in this area. Where else might we move this church? And some of those committees were thinking about money and trying to raise the money that we would need in order to move closer and closer to this goal. So it could seem to be the story of committees. But if you dig underneath that, what you find out is that it's really a story of courage and commitment. A story of courage and commitment in the service of a vision. Of a vision that will serve not only us, but also people who come long after we are gone. Step by step, we've come to this place of launching this capital campaign. Now, over the summer, in the spring and the summer, we invited people who we thought might have the capacity and the will to be lead donors to this campaign to make an early contribution. Now we're at the place that we're inviting every single person to make a contribution. Now, some of those folks over the summer gave significant sums of money, thousands upon thousands of dollars. And that might have been frightening for some of them and a stretch, because it's an investment in faith, an investment in our dreams, and it will take all of our effort to see that they come to fruition. Those gifts are so meaningful. At the same time, as we invite all of you to make a contribution now to this campaign, we know that every person's capacity is different. And just like it may have been a stretch for some of our early donors to give thousands upon thousands of dollars, I know for certain it will be a stretch for some members of our congregation to give $100. All of our capacities are different. But what matters is the spirit of commitment and the act of courage. And so the person for whom it is a stretch to give $100, that gift is no less meaningful than the stretch that was made by the person who gave hundreds, hundreds, and upon hundreds of dollars. The commitment is the same. The dollar level differs based upon our own capacities. So I hope that you will consider your commitment. I hope you'll consider what this congregation means to you as you determine what a stretch for you might be. And you'll have an opportunity to think about that and to discuss that with some other volunteers from our congregation in the weeks ahead. And I predict that we are going to be wildly successful. And I can predict that with confidence because we have already been wildly successful. So many people have contributed to this effort over the years. So many people have given their time and their energy and their love to this project over the years. And now there are people who are giving their dollars. And without a dollar more, we have already been a success. And I know that there will be many more dollars and the success will be beyond our imagining. I predict it. And I predict that it won't be long before we're in our new space. And we will have flourishing ministries because we already do. And that new space is going to inspire us to do even more. I have visions. There are things that I think that we can do once our physical resources equip us. I think we can host community events. Maybe we'll host the Martin Luther King Day dinner. Maybe we'll host the Kent Interfaith Alliance. Right now, we don't have the space to do that. There are going to be new possibilities for reaching out into this community. We have phenomenal musical resources in this congregation. We know how to help people use music to lift their own spirits and the spirits of others. We're going to have more capacity to share that gift more widely. We have incredible sexuality educators in this congregation. And there are so many people around us in this community who receive little to no comprehensive sexuality education. And I've had a vision for a long time that maybe this is something we could offer not just for our own members, but for anybody in the community who wants to have that kind of experience. That's my idea. You're going to have different ideas. What we actually do, I don't know. But whatever it is, I am confident that it is going to be filled with music and art and with the spirit of love and justice. And it is going to be an inspiration to us, to our larger community, and to the people who follow us. That's where we're headed, and we will achieve that goal together. And I get to tell you one more story today before I'm done. This is a story of Randy and Renee Rahutsky, and I tell it with their permission. They were among the early donors to our campaign this summer. And they went into that invitation to give already having a number in mind. It was a substantial gift, and they felt good about it. But after they had an opportunity to hear more about where we're headed, what our vision is, and how we're going to get there, they felt inspired to stretch even a little bit further than what they already had in mind. And they saw in the materials that we prepared that we have some naming opportunities. If you were here in the spring, you heard that we're naming the new fellowship hall, the Hobbs Hall, after Olive and Clinton Hobbs. Olive is our longest tenured member of the congregation, and her deceased husband, who was a member for a very long time as well. And we offered some additional naming opportunities to members of the congregation, and you'll see some of those too when you have an opportunity to review your materials. Well, as Randy and Renee thought about their commitment, they saw that one of those naming opportunities was a goal that they could reach. And so they have decided, and our Board of Trustees has approved, naming the new education and library wing in the new building after a former member of our congregation who died a few years ago, Dr. Gordon Forrest Vars. Gordon was a longtime member of our congregation, and Renee and I had the opportunity this week to go visit his widow to tell her of this tribute in his honor. And as we talked about Gordon's life and his commitment, and then later as I spoke with Renee afterwards about what that conversation meant to her, she said, you know, Gordon lived Unitarian Universalism in the world. He didn't just live at a church. He lived it in the world. He was an educator, and he gave his life to educating middle school children and other people who would be educators of middle school children. And he was a conservationist, and he gave his life to doing what he could to help protect the environment. And the Kent Bog is a testimony testament to his efforts. And he was a Unitarian Universalist. And he gave his life to help ensure that we were doing everything we could to instill a spirit of inquiry and a love of love and justice and a spiritual groundedness in the middle school children of this congregation. He was the middle school teacher here for a long, long time. Gordon was someone who lived Unitarian Universalism. He inspired so many who remember him, and now with his name on that new wing, he will inspire so many more who are yet to come. Will the ushers please come forward? Our offering is a symbol of our covenant. It would be easy to just say, support the congregation however you can. Mail a check, use your bank auto withdrawal, go online and use PayPal. And in fact, we do have all those ways available for people to give to the congregation. And yet we persist every week in taking an offering. And the reason we do is because the ushers and these baskets and the passing of them remind us of our covenant, our commitment to one another. We sustain our spiritual community ourselves. We are the ones who make this place our home. And so if you're a guest this morning, as the baskets pass you by, we hope you'll take a candle from the basket as our gift to you. We're glad you're with us. The offering will now be gratefully received.
So I'm telling you, we are excited today, and I hope you are too, because this is the kickoff of the general campaign. And before I go any further, I want to share with you, if you'll pull out the insert from your order service that is the capital campaign insert, one of the pages lists the Cornerstone Society members. And these are the people who have donated early to the campaign. And wait till you hear how much money has been donated and pledged since January 1st. Our goal for the campaign, we've been told we could raise between $1.25 million and $1.8 million is what we've been told that we could raise. And already we have in donations and pledges $615,000. Is that amazing? I mean, we're going to build a building. We're going to do this. And we have total faith. The Capital Campaign team has total faith that the rest of the congregation, we have sent letters to anybody who's ever walked through these doors, practically. We sent them a letter with a self-addressed return envelope and all the and an explanation of what's going on. So we hope some of those people come through, too. But, you know, people up here today have talked about the legacy. The reason we're in this building today is because the last 150 years, people have been generous and have poured money into maintaining this congregation at this site. And this is our turn. This is our legacy. This is what we're leaving. This is what we're building, not just for ourselves in the short term, but for anybody who needs this place in the future. You know, we're establishing a once-in-a-generation place to for those people to come and be. So we're living our vision. We read our vision statement. This is not for us alone. The other thing I want you to look at in the insert is a list of the volunteers. We have listed, and this doesn't include some of the people who are involved today in helping set up this luncheon outside. There are more people out there helping today. We have a list of 80 people, I think we counted, who have already helped with this campaign, in addition to the building expansion team and the capital campaign team. And I just want to mention right now that Dave Smeltzer and Randy Leeson have been involved in this since the very beginning. Talk about perseverance. You know, it's been a lot of work over the last year, but they've been involved in it for 4 or 5 years. And they've done a lot of good. Let's have a hand for them. Randy, Dave. So
So this is a lot of names, a lot of people to be grateful for. So we're grateful for everything everybody has done. And I just want to talk also about, Melissa mentioned that we know that we have some people who cannot give as generously as others can. And some of the people in our congregation have spoken frankly in public about the poverty that they live with. But we want to emphasize that we don't want those people to feel guilty, because their time and their talent are worth just as much to us as treasure that anybody else can give. So, you know, I know that those people sometimes feel they wish they could give. We all wish we could give more. As much as we're giving, we all wish we could give more. But we want people to know that their time and talent, people are more important to this congregation than money. Money's important, but people are more important. And there are many ways to give. You can give in a lump sum. You can donate monthly. Some people are sponsoring fundraisers. I mean, look at today. We have the Hey Mavis concert. What a generous donation that is. We're so grateful, Hal. Thanks for you and the music committee for bringing that around. It's going to be great. I think that pretty much covers everything I wanted to say. However, I do want to introduce Bill Quantz. He's our Unitarian Universalist Association stewardship consultant, and he has helped bring us to this point. We've been talking to him. He's been here. He was here for the feasibility study. You may remember that. And so he's going to say a few words to us. And then, save this because we're going to have a little ceremony for the visiting stewards.
Good morning. It's interesting how service components come together. I was sitting in the second aisle here and listening to Reverend Melissa say, we're going to have all our documents and all our history completely organized and referenced. And I thought, now there's a faith statement. That you've been doing this, you've been on this path for about 8 years now, and I've had the privilege of walking with you for about three of those years. And so it's no surprise for me that we're where we are today, that you're getting ready to launch the biggest thing you've done as a congregation in at least a generation. Part of my job is to speak truth, and sometimes I have to tell congregations you're just not quite ready. I never had to do that here. You're ready. This is the right project at the right time, at the right place, for the right congregation. You have the capability to do this. You really do. It's just a perfect thing to do, and I'm so pleased for you that you are where you are. I want to share a little image with you. Stand by a second. There we go. I spend a lot of time in hardware stores. That's where I go to kind of clear my head. I like the aroma of fresh sawdust and turning the corner and seeing a new tool I didn't even know how bad I needed until I saw it today. And then I have to think of a project to do it. But while I was in the hardware store this week, I ran across something we've all seen 100,000 times that sort of reminded me of this congregation. It was a length of chain. If you look at a chain, the individual links are okay. I mean, it's polished steel. They're strong, but you know, they're just a little circle of steel. But you put them all together, and you got something really useful. You got something strong, something that works because it's all bound together, and it works to protect, to bind, to connect. It's a really useful metaphor for a good congregation. And then I got to thinking about, maybe this is your timeline. Everything over here represents 150 years. Think about that, 150 years of inspiring each other, comforting each other, being the voice of conscience for this whole community. Pretty special. That's the next 150 years. You're going to do the same thing for people that have not walked through the doors yet, people that aren't even born, but they're going to owe you a debt of gratitude for making it possible for them to come in and enjoy what you've enjoyed. You're going to pass it on to them. So what's left? One little link in the middle. Guess who that is? That's us. That's you today. You're the ones that are going to decide, how do we honor what we did in the past, and how are we going to lay a path for what comes for the next 150 years. It's an enviable place to be. I've mentioned to several of you, I hope you know how fortunate you are to have this community. This is an extraordinary community with a great history and a better future. And I know you're up to it. So this is your time. This is the time where you're going to be that link that puts it all together. You got some wonderful visiting stewards. We had a good day together yesterday talking about the conversations they're going to have with you. I invite you to take that as an opportunity to build community and get to know each other. Go forward and do this thing. And I look forward to the invitation to the ribbon cutting. See you at lunch.
How many of our visiting stewards are here right now? I know probably everybody's coming to the second service. If you would stand up with your insert with the covenant, the stewards will read their part and the congregation will respond. Please, we're gonna have a covenant with these visiting stewards who will be calling not all of you, but some of you. So when you receive their call, we're asking you to please be kind. So if the stewards would start. We stand before you committed to doing our best to make our congregation's dreams come true. We ask each of you for your help in supporting the mission and vision of our congregation. We commit ourselves to preparing for each stewardship conversation by having already made our own financial commitment and becoming knowledgeable about the goals of our capital campaign. We further commit ourselves to contact each of you to set up a convenient time for our stewardship conversation and to arrive on time. We commit ourselves to listen respectfully to your dreams and concerns. We promise to keep private what should be private and pass along only that information that you have asked us to share. And together, we commit ourselves to enjoy each other's company, to respect each other's ideas, perception, and beliefs, and to have a good time while raising money to ensure the future health and strength of our church. If you build castles in the air, your dreams need not be lost. That's where they should be. Now put foundations under them.